Chapter 28. Grand Hotel Beauvau, Vieuxport, Marseille, France. Even as Sam tipped the bellhop and shut the door behind him, Remy was dialing the iPhone. Selma answered on the first ring.
"Safe and sound, Mrs. Fargo."
"Safe and sound," Remy replied as she sat on the bed and kicked off her shoes. "Now, will you tell me why we're in Marseille?" After leaving Kolkoff and his mustachioed partner teetering on the precipice, they'd driven at the Lancia's best speed to Nisporto. Umberto, his forearm wrapped in his own shirt, used the sat phone to alert his cousin to their arrival. Nisporto, a village of a few hundred people, sat in the nook of a V-shaped cove 10 miles up the coast from Portoferraio. When they arrived, Umberto's wife Teresa and his cousins, all 5 of them, were waiting at the back door. While Teresa tended to Umberto's wound, which had missed hitting any bones or arteries, the cousins bundled the now conscious Bianco into the garage. The mother of the house, Umberto's Aunt Brunella, ushered Sam and Remy into the house and straight to the kitchen table, where she set about feeding them homemade pasta with onions, capers, olives, and red sauce. 30 minutes later, Umberto reappeared, his arm bandaged.
"We've put you in some danger," Sam said.
"Nonsense. You've helped me redeem my honor. I think my father would have been proud."
"I think he would, too," Remy said, leaning over and kissing him on the cheek.
"Thank you."
Sam asked, "Do we want to know what you're going to do with Bianco?"
"Here, and in Corsica, he's untouchable. On the mainland..." Umberto shrugged. "I'll make some calls. I think with the right evidence, real or otherwise, the Carabinieri will be happy to embrace him. As for the other one, his partner, he's a coward. We'll be fine, my friends. Now, finish eating, and we'll see about getting you off the island."
Knowing Bondurek's influence and Kolkoff's thoroughness made the Marina di Campo airport too risky, they'd enlisted Umberto's cousin Yermete, who ran a charter fishing boat, to ferry them back to Piombino on the Italian mainland. From there, they'd returned to Florence, checked into the Palazzo Magnani-Ferroni, and called Selma, who directed them to email her the photographed symbols from Laurent's codebook, then head straight to Marseille. The next morning, they dropped the book itself into an overnight envelope for San Diego, then headed to the airport.
"Why all the mystery?" Remy now asked Selma.
Sam sat down on the bed, and Remy put the phone on speaker.
"No mystery," Selma replied. "I was hashing out some details, but I knew you'd want to be in Marseille one way or the other. By the way, Pete and Wendy are working on the symbols right now. It's fascinating stuff, but the book's condition is the big question."
Sam said, "Selma..."
"Oh, sorry. Remember Wolfgang Müller, captain of the UM-77? I found him."
"Him? You mean..."
"Yep, he's still alive. Took a lot of legwork, but it turns out he was aboard the Lotrinen when it was captured. After the war, he was shipped back to Germany by way of Marseille. He got off the boat, but didn't take the train home. He lives with his granddaughter. I've got their address."
The next morning, they got up and walked to a café, Le Capri, a few blocks away on Rue Bailly du Suffren, overlooking the Vieuxport, or Old Port, which was filled with sailboats of all shapes and sizes, their sails dancing in the offshore breeze. The bright morning sun glinted off the water. At the mouth of the port, rising from the north and south shorelines, were the forts of Saint-Jean and Saint-Nicolas. Above these on the hillside stood the Abbaye de Saint-Victor and the churches of Saint-Vincent and Saint-Catherine. Farther out, in the Bay of Marseille proper, lay the four-island archipelago of Friot. Sam and Remy had been to Marseille 3 times together, the last a few years earlier on their way to the Camargue up the coast. Every May, some 20,000 gypsies from Western and Eastern Europe gathered there to celebrate their Gitane heritage. They finished breakfast and hailed a taxi, giving the driver an address in the Panier, a cluster of medieval-esque neighborhoods filled with tightly packed pastel-painted houses
sandwiched between the town hall and the Vieille Charité. Wolfgang Müller lived in a two-story, butter-yellow, white-shuttered apartment on Rue des Cordelles. A blonde woman in her mid-twenties answered the door when they knocked.
"Bonjour," Sam said.
"Bonjour.
Parlez-vous anglais?"
"Yes, I speak English."
Sam introduced himself and Remy. "We're looking for Monsieur Müller. Is he at home?"
"Yes, of course.
May I ask what this is about?"
They'd already discussed this and decided honesty was the best course. Remy replied, "We'd like to talk to him about the UM-77 and the Lotrinen." The woman cocked her head slightly, her eyes narrowing. Clearly her grandfather had told her about his time in the war.
"One moment, please."
Leaving the door open, she walked down a hall and disappeared around the corner. They heard muffled voices for a minute, then she reappeared.
"Please, come in. My name is Monique. This way, please."
She led them into the front room, where they found Müller sitting in a rocking chair in front of a muted television tuned to France's version of the Weather Channel. He wore a gray cardigan buttoned up to his throat, and his lap was covered in a blue and yellow argyle blanket. Completely bald, his face heavily wrinkled, Müller watched them through a pair of placid blue eyes.
"Good morning," he said, in a surprisingly strong voice. He gestured with a trembling hand to a floral-patterned couch across from him.
"Please, can I offer you some coffee?"
"No, thank you," Remy answered.
"Monique tells me you found Ilse."
"Ilse?" Sam asked.
"It's what I named the 77.
After my wife.
She died in the Dresden bombings a few months after we left Bremerhaven. You found her in the cave, in Rom Key."
Remy nodded. "We were doing some exploring and came across the entrance. We found her sitting on the bottom, in almost pristine condition."
"She's still there?"
Sam smiled.
"Well, no, not exactly. There was a problem. We used her as what you might call an escape raft."
"I don't understand."
"The main entrance collapsed. We rode the 77.
Ilse.
Rode Ilse down the underground river and out through another cave." Müller's eyes went wide and he smiled.
"That's astounding. I'm glad she was put to good use."
"We've arranged to have her transported back to the U.S. If you'd like, we'll have her shipped." Müller was shaking his head.
"That's kind of you, but no. Keep her. Take good care of her."
He smiled and shook his finger at them.
"Something tells me you didn't come all this way just to tell me that."
"We also found the UM-34. At this, Müller leaned forward.
"Und Manfred?"
"Captain Boehm was still aboard her." Sam recounted their discovery of the sub, leaving out any mention of Bondarek or Kolkoff. "The authorities are salvaging her right now."
"Mein Gott. We'd always worried about the weather. Those boats weren't meant for open ocean."
Müller's eyes went distant for 10 seconds, then he blinked and refocused on them.
"Manfred was a good friend of mine. It always pained me that I never knew what happened. Thank you."
"The reason we're here is the wine," Remy said.
"The wine? Oh, the bottles. Yes, we were going to celebrate with them after the mission was over." "Are you telling me they survived?"
Remy nodded. "One aboard the 34, and one aboard Ilse."
"On the third? Did you find that one?" "As Manfred had the harder of the two missions, I gave him 2 bottles.
"We found a shard near his sub's resting place. We're not sure how it got out of the sub." Müller waved his hand.
"The vagaries of war."
"Just out of curiosity," Sam said, "can you tell us about your mission? What were you and Boehm trying to accomplish?" Mueller frowned, thinking. After a few moments, he said,
I suppose it doesn't really matter now. It was an absurd task, really, concocted by the Führer himself. Manfred was supposed to sail up Chesapeake Bay and attack the Navy base at Norfolk. At the same time, I was to attack the ammunition depot in Charleston, but Ilsa had a problem with her screw, so we were delayed. Before we could repair it, we were recalled to Bremerhaven. You know the rest. About the Lothringen and all that?
You'd stopped at Rum Key for refitting. What kind?
Bigger batteries to increase the boat's ranges. Another idiotic plan. Both Manfred and I knew the missions were suicide.
Then why did you volunteer?
Mueller shrugged. Duty? Indiscretion of youth? Neither of us were fond of Hitler or the party, but it was still our country. We wanted to do what we could.
We were hoping you might tell us more about the bottles, Remy said. Where they came from.
Why?
We're collectors. As it turns out, they were very old and very rare. Mueller chuckled.
I never knew. Well, I might have guessed they were important somehow. My brother Carl gave them to me before we shipped out from Bremerhaven. He told me he found them here, actually. He was in the army and was part of the occupation force.
Where exactly did he find them?
Let me think.
Mueller scratched his head.
My memory isn't quite what it used to be. It was a castle. No, not a castle. A fort.
He sighed in frustration. Then his eyes lit up.
It was one of the islands in the bay. Do you remember that book by Dumas, The Count of Monte Cristo?
Both Sam and Remy had read it. In an instant, they knew what Mueller was talking about.
Ile d'If?
Yes, that's it.
He found them in the Chateau d'If.